Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 167 on Tuesday, the 13th of March, 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be discussing new car registration figures for February and not what I'd written down. Also, late buses to get a free pass in Swansea. And Cars and Coffee is back in Redditch soon.
You must have spent ages on that middle one.
No, that came quickly to me.
Really?
I was trying to think of slightly happier ones. There was plenty to not be happy about. So,
oh, there's always plenty to not be happy about if you look hard enough.
Come on, you've got some follow-up because you've been to Geneva.
I've got some follow-up. I have now been to Geneva. So thank you, people, for your feedback on last week, by the way. We know that the audio wasn't great, but we were on plan C by that point, everyone, okay?
Just so you know. We felt the content deserved to be out, even though it wasn't what we would ideally have done anyway.
No. And next time we do something like that, we'll change it so it's better, because that's what we try and do.
Yeah.
If we change it and it's worse, then we've failed miserably, but never mind. You'll never know if we did. I just wanted to follow up, yeah, because I've been to Geneva.
So you're now going to talk from a position of knowing things instead of from our little hillock where we throw stones of scorn and cynicism without actually knowing.
Stop tarring me with your brush. I throw positivity and light on things.
Hippie.
Relatively speaking. Hippie. So, yeah, quite, man. So I wanted to talk about just a couple of things I saw. Polestar 1, you think it looks good in the photos, you think it looks good in white, wait till you see it in the flesh in grey, it looks fantastic. When you see it in real life, when you can actually see the subtlety that's in there and sort of minimal lines that are involved in it. There is one brand that's warbling on about reductive design and all sorts of twaddle like that. This is actually it in practice. It's great. It's really good. My comments previously about the lack of a badge in the middle of the grille still stand, though. It still looks a bit aftermarket. It's the only bit I don't like. And the yellow seatbelts are even nicer in real life.
How long will they stay yellow, though? That's the question.
But I don't know. It depends how sweaty you are. Really,
wear white gloves as you like a Japanese taxi driver.
Sponge them. You can just we don't all have kids. You can sponge them down. That's allowed. Tepid water.
Come on. Okay, enough of that. So, go on then. You went and had a look at the M8, which was divisive in its looks.
Well, it was divisive in Richard himself. he couldn't make up his mind. I really liked it. I saw what he meant about the razzmatazz, though, because it was in a dark... there will be a blog post up, guys, whenever I actually have more than 10 minutes sitting on my bottom not doing something. And it's because it was shown in this kind of darkened discotheque at the back, at the back of the stand, and there was some moving lights and stuff. I've got a little bit of a movie of that. So I understand exactly what he meant by the razzmatazz. It doesn't give you a flavour of what it looked like in real life, but I thought it looked fantastic. I love the kind of brass effect around the kidneys on the front. I love the colour. I love the form. I would love even more to see it on the street in real life. I think if you saw that on the street, it would be jaw-droppingly nice, as opposed to the way they chose to show it off with fake smoke and moving lights and stuff. I absolutely get what you were saying. But I think that in real life, it's going to be an absolute stunner.
Okay.
Personally, the color is great, by the way. That dark green, great. Dark green, the color for new cars,
I like,
by the way.
The color, and we'll leave it at that.
Oh, no, honestly, in real life, you would go, oh, yeah, I get what you're on about.
Okay,
genuinely. Okay. The surprise of the show for me was very, very subtle. You know, there was so much I knew about and so much because last week we read up an awful lot and then we talked a lot and then I read even more and then I went and I saw stuff even more. The big surprise for me was one of the facelifted C-Class that was on the Mercedes stand.
Okay.
Now, the C-Class facelift is so mild, it practically apologizes to you as you walk near it. Okay.
So what have they done?
Well, one of the ones that was on the stand was a C330DE.
Is that a diesel hybrid?
Now, that's a diesel hybrid.
Okay.
And I didn't know that. I don't know if that's coming to the UK market or anything like that. But a diesel hybrid has seemed so obvious for so long I was just amazed why one wasn't out there. And to see one that's a new vehicle and a new model being launched, and the one on the stand was a diesel hybrid, was very interesting.
Is this a saloon or an estate?
It was a saloon. It was the one on there was a saloon, but they do petrol hybrids in saloon and estate forms. I don't know why the diesel one would be any different. But I spotted that and I thought, ooh, that's interesting. And it, as I say, was a surprise.
Well, I've got friends here who've got the petrol hybrids.
I met a guy last week before when I was getting the NX5 windscreen changed. And he started to lecture me on the benefits of hybrids and electric vehicles.
That's good of him.
It was very good of him. And then I played the one-upmanship card with Charger. Yeah,
how did that go?
It was fine. He kind of shut up after a minute
good.
Or two. That happens quite a lot.
So was this diesel hybrid, the fact it was a diesel hybrid that caught your attention, or did it look? Did the car actually look good as well?
The car looked like a C-Class.
Okay. So it was the technology. Fine, okay.
Basically, if I hadn't known it was a facelift, because somebody told me it was a facelift, I wouldn't have known it was a facelift. It was the technology, it was the fact it was there. That's what surprised
me. Okay, cool.
And I wasn't expecting that. And I hadn't seen anyone mention it, so I thought I would. Last up, of not mentioning things, the Apache, the I-Pace. The Jaguar stand is very close to the entrance I went in from. And so I got there before the crowds and actually managed to sit in it and have a wee bit of a poke. So I've got pictures of the boot floor and stuff.
Curry hooks.
Because Andy, I am. I said, "Oh, I never thought to check."
Oh, for God's sake!
I'll wait till you're talking later on and check my photos. Sorry, whilst I'm listening to you, Andrew, I'll do that. It's really cool. It looks even better in the flesh than it does in real life.
What's the inside like?
I love the interior. Really nice. I didn't sit in the back. I don't think it's maybe as spacious as the equivalent American brand beginning with a T. But that's purely on looking at it quickly whilst going, "Ha-ha, nobody's sitting in the front." And getting in. So it's true. Honestly, guys, public day. And I love the ventilation controls. You might have seen the exchange on Twitter. About the inspiration for the Nurling.
Mm.
If not, we'll talk about it sometime we get one to drive. I was asked what I thought, and I responded that really I'd need a week with one to come to any real conclusions.
It's quite right.
Yeah. But no, I liked it. It looks right. I mean, we'd seen it before in concept form and race form, and both of those are very, very similar to production form. But to actually be able to, you know, poke at it and sit in it was nice.
Cool.
I like it. I want it to be a humongous success. So, yeah, that was that. I just wanted to talk about those four very quickly. As I say, I will get round to a blog post, but I'm a little bit... I wouldn't say I'm snowed under the last couple of weeks and the next couple of weeks, but yeah.
Okay, come on. New news.
New news. So the big new news, which is really the big new news from last week, but we didn't cover it because we were doing other stuff, was the SMMT figures. So this is your chance, everyone, to queue up the sign of the swinging symbol and get ready for us to read out from spreadsheets in a very interesting manner. The headline figures for February is year on year. There was a drop of 5.1%, which... isn't as horrible as it's been for other things.
No.
Andrew, you're so lucky you're not talking, because the number of times I could be going ding at the minute is
I know, I've been up a long time
and
today.
I'm only pointing that out because... because he doesn't hesitate to bring me up on it.
I have matched a few of yours lately.
Pardon me. Year to date, it's down 5.1. Yeah. Percentage change for February is only down 2.8%. So, yes, there's a drop, but not as big a drop as there has been recently. Diesel down 23.5% year on year. Petrol up 14.4%. Alternative fuel up 7.2% to a 4.4% market share. Sales down. Private fleet and business down 30% at the minute.
Did you see that? I think it was Tom Callow has been quoted as saying alternative fuel vehicle will reach 10% in a couple of years.
I missed that. I've missed quite a lot of that kind of thing recently. I don't think that Tom's wrong. I'm sure many people disagree, but I don't. I think he's probably right. Should we run through the bestsellers?
Let's do that. Quickly.
Bestsellers. Number 10, Kia Sportage, 1,152. So no huge numbers this month, really. So Kia Sportage, 1,152. BMW 3 Series in at 9th. C-Class in at 8th. The Mini in at 7th. Then a small jump up from the Mini to 6, which is the which is the Vauxhall Mokka X at 1525. Ford Kuga slightly outsells that. Number 4 is the Mercedes-Benz A-Class. Again, that's maybe another 100 more at 1671. Third's a Ford Focus. Second is the Volkswagen Golf at 2927 cars registered.
So what can possibly be number one?
Well, Andrew, I'm glad you asked me that, because number one with 5,201 vehicles registered was the Ford Fiesta in there. So the Ford Fiesta, when you look at the year to dates, by the way, number two is the Volkswagen Golf with 7,237. Number one is the Ford Fiesta with 13,536. So almost double the sales.
Where are they?
They're starting to be everywhere.
Yes, I know. I am seeing them more and more.
All of a sudden, there is an explosion of Fiesta.
Yes. It's positive
Fiesta. But not in a sort of Vauxhall Zafira way.
Yes.
A Fiesta of Fiesta, that's it. Yes.
Shall we run through the spreadsheet of doom?
Yes, the doom's not as doomy as it has been.
No, there are some particular outstanding ones, though.
Do you want to do the outstanding ones?
Okay.
I love forcing you to be positive about stuff.
All right, go on then. You do. Shall I start with the positive, or shall I end with the positive?
I'll tell you what, why don't I do the gloomy stuff and you end with the positive, because that's even more painful for you. There's a couple. The sort of big luxury brands seem to be down, generally speaking. The ones that do a sort of more batch release of stuff. So Aston, Bentley, I've lost the others now. Aston, Bentley, there was someone else I noticed. Porsche's down a bit, isn't it? No, Porsche's up. Aston, Bentley are down. Lotus is down. That's what I was looking there for. Lexus is down a bit too. So as are Jaguar, Jeep, so on and so forth. Land Rover 2, that's just not in the same bit of list as me. So they're all sort of down that sort of 15 to 30%-ish, really. Who else? There's a couple of outstandingly grim ones. Nissan is down 54%. Vauxhall is down 22%. It's not as bad as I thought.
Renault
are down
grim.
36. Yeah. 36. DS are just not selling any cars. 56%.
I don't think the DS7 can enter this country quick enough for DS.
Well, yes.
If people are going to buy it. Interesting. If people are going to buy it, that is.
That's true. Oh, there is going to be... if this isn't too much of a giveaway, this week's motoring research column will actually be about the stuff that wasn't at Geneva. That's what I meant to say at the end of the last story. So a little bit of the stuff that we didn't see going around the place. And that kind of covers most of the doom and gloom. I mean, it's not brilliant. Who else is...
Toyota.
Toyota's down 13% as well, yeah.
Skoda. But they were Skoda up last month, as well. Skoda's down.
Skoda's down 12%. Yeah, it's not awesome. Some brands are were relatively stable. Peugeot, for example, were just down 6%. Mazda were up 5%. Suzuki were just down 2%. Honda were down 7%. Yeah, so that's all pretty much there and thereabouts. But there were a couple of really positive up the ways, weren't there?
Well, yeah, there was a competition on who can have the largest percentage increase last month. And the fight was between Dacia and McLaren.
Could I just say that they completely and utterly trounced MG, no matter what it is MG keep trying to tell us?
I don't think MG have tried to tell us anything this time.
There's quite a bad one, by the way. The more MGs were registered than DS. There you go. That's all you need to know about.
Yes, yes. But Subaru were up nearly 30%, but that translates as 62 cars registered. But more realistically, Seat, 36, nearly 36.5%, and that's up to 2,358 vehicles registered. So that's good. Porsche were up 100, just over 100%. Mitsubishi had a good month. They've had quite a few poor months, but
well, they had the of course
new thingy,
the
isn't it?
The new used to be a coupe, now is a sort of old thing. It's the Eclipse.
Yes,
there we go. Eclipse Cross thing. Something or other.
Yes, I'm still not sure what that's meant to be.
Can you? Maybe I should be paying more attention to that. I'm sorry,
yeah, but that helped them go up nearly 45%. Mm. So that's good. MG, yeah, as you mentioned, up 60. Nearly 68%. McLaren up 100%, so they now registered 28 vehicles.
Well, they're a batch job there when it comes to it. The one really to talk about is Ford, isn't it?
Yeah, Ford have done outstanding, frankly. Nearly 22% increase. So that is from 9,909 vehicles up to 12,046, which is excellent on anybody's, by anybody's stretch of the imagination, let alone at the time where, you know, the overall line for say or for registrations is down. And it is a downward slant. Well, it's not a curve or anything, it's a slant. So this is a fantastic effort by Ford.
Well, did they not have their best... It's not something about their best... The best salesman.
They're best in Europe. They've had their best in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, it was the best in Europe. That's it. Since 2014, was it?
Something crazy like that.
For quite a long time. So Ford in February had a fantastic month across the whole of Europe, as well as a good month here in the UK. And I think that was reflected when I went through the top 10 in there with the Cougar, the Focus, and the Fiesta all in there, when the only Vauxhall was the Mach-E.
Yes.
Whereas traditionally we would expect to see the Astra, we'd expect to see the Corsa, and they're just nowhere.
No. More of the premium brands, BMW and Audi both up as well, 10.21 and 17.26% respectively. So overall grim, but some companies are doing okay.
A mixed bag in there. So definitely not as bad as we've seen it in the past, where everything's been red.
No. You just give me a second. I need to put my tinfoil hat on before I do this next article.
I know. So, I before we get into this, I just very quickly want to say something that Andrew and I discussed. I've said to Andrew already before we started recording, which is, remember, folks, when you get a rental car, don't forget to wipe your personal data when you give it back. If you've decided that you needed to link phones and whatever else. So, Andrew, Mazdas.
Yes, an article from Car Buzz.
Allegedly. It hasn't actually been said, it's just that it was blatantly obvious it was a Mazda infotainment system.
Article from BuzzFeed where it goes on to talk about And here's the headline. So guess, see if you can work out what it is. Here's why you shouldn't connect your phone to a Mazda rental car. What's happened is that there was a big security conference near Cancun. Of course there was. Of course that's where they picked.
A Cancun, how awful for them. Never
happened. I was going to say never happens in Sheffield, like
that's wrong.
But one of the talks given was from two security researchers who said they found a vulnerability in Mazda's infotainment system, which means that they can, if you have physical access, and this is important, you need physical access to this for this exploit. If you have physical access to the Mazda with this particular infotainment system, which isn't really described in here, they can pull out all the data that the car has taken from your phone that you have paired up. Of particular interest of the in this article is actually the amount of information that the car actually took from the phone.
Can I just quickly say, hang on, now that I'm... Oh, so the car is crawling the phone, not the car could be made to crawl the phone via the exploit. Sorry, that's just what I was checking, just to make sure we weren't making fools of ourselves.
Well, no more than usual.
No more than usual, yeah.
They found... So if you connect your phone to the car, you expect it to access certain things. You expect... when it, and they usually ask you, do you want to put your contacts? Do you want to log your calls? Do you want to put your emails in there? Some of them, God knows why. Who the hell wants email on your car? Just stop doing that, car manufacturers, okay? Just stop doing that. I've said that before. I'll keep saying it. That sort of thing. And text messages. You would expect that is the question you are asked. Whether you say yes or no is up to you, but you would expect those questions to be asked. However, in this instance, it was storing text messages, call records, app activity, photos, contacts, GPS history, and emails. And here's the really stunning bit, all unencrypted.
That's a curious one because I have Mazda, which I do.
For a little while.
And for a little while longer. I have a Mazda. I have a Mazda. I use an iPhone. I know that I don't have all that functionality, but I believe if you have other brands of phone, it's possible to get things like your text messages and your emails from within the car. I know that I can't. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that this may well depend on your phone's operating system, but I know that I am unable personally to access text messages, emails from my car. However, I can get contacts, of course.
But they were saying they were going into the back end, which is Linux powered, to get this. Mm-hmm. So, again, because we are not experts in this.
No, we're trying to be careful what we say here.
We're not experts in this, that it is... When they say these things, it could be because they've got into the back end of it and not necessarily someone just puts in a new phone and says, yes, I'd like to take that data out or something silly like that. It's probably, I would expect there's quite a bit of laptop being plugged into things and lots of clickety-clickety going on to get in there.
Lots of fancy scrolling text and zooming through graphics like we see in movies.
Whilst wearing a hoodie. So, but another interesting element of this story is that QNX is a division of BlackBerry, which provides software for Mazda vehicles.
Who remembers BlackBerry?
Yes, well, they're trying to. What are they? They're doing something. Anyway, forget that. Forget that.
They're doing loads.
I know they're doing lots of car things because you know BlackBerrys are safe. But QNX, this division of BlackBerry, which provides software for Mazda vehicles. But it doesn't. But no one's been able to ascertain because they haven't been able to speak to the researchers whether it was a QNX subsystem that was exploited or not. However, QNX was also the company that sorted out the Uconnect, which had been hacked in the Jeeps, if you remember the Jeep hacking from a couple of years ago. So I would imagine there's someone in QNX being chased around with a big stick while someone is screaming at them going, oh my God, I hope you are getting this right now. Because that doesn't look good. Because, I mean, because I don't know the ins and outs. I don't know how many other manufacturers QNX works with. Any manufacturers listening, could you just double check whether QNX is working with you? And please, could you double check then with QNX that somebody hasn't just copied from GitHub without fully understanding what line of code they've borrowed?
Yes. That never happens, Andrew. Don't be so cynical. Open source is good.
Yes. Anyway. Yes. Anyway, just to reiterate, so I'm not scaremongering, you have to have physical access to the car to then get in and take all that information back out.
Just always wipe your
Take everything off.
And
don't connect if you don't need to.
Don't connect if you don't need to, and don't forget if you have needed to connect. Sometimes you do. Then make sure you wipe it down in the settings menu. We try and do that with press cards. It's a matter of course.
Yes, and it's interesting to see all the names that are in front of us.
The last one that we had, that I had, came completely wiped. It was completely fresh.
Yeah, mine did as well. The one before that,
I think,
didn't.
They do it. I think that some manufacturers now do it as a matter of course. Anyway, should we talk about good connected vehicles?
Well,
particularly
not necessarily saying this is good, but here gives us a flavour of how they could possibly be used for good.
If it works properly, I think it's really good. There's an article on the BBC about first Cymru. Oh no, I've walked myself into the Welsh pronunciation trap, haven't I? Cymru, thank you. You know better than me. Cymru. About late running buses in Swansea, hopefully being able to make up time because the trackers attached to them can signal that they're running late, and so traffic lights can give them priority to help them make up time and therefore become hopefully a more attractive way of travelling around sunny Swansea.
Yeah, I find this interesting for a couple of reasons, because one, this is the sort of stuff we've been promised for many years now. Oh, it's going to fix congestion.
Well,
but as with all this stuff, and as we've said many times, this is taking time to deploy. This is taking time to actually get into the field and test. And this is, here we are with the test. And it's great to see that they are doing it in a controlled manner where they're obviously going to be able to show whether it does or doesn't work how they hoped. And then we can see any unintended consequences of it as well, because they are monitoring it closely, because the GPS signal gets sent back to a control part for the local government, who is controlling the traffic lights.
Yeah. So can I talk from this from a point of a little bit of knowledge in this?
Because I do know what podcast this is. Yeah,
I do. Yeah.
Sorry to break from our normal traditional broadcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Enough. Don't be so hard on me. I did a little bit of work with a traffic systems manufacturer and supplier a couple of years ago. And this has been possible for a while. Okay, this has been possible and planned and ready for implementation for some time. And the challenge is really, when it comes to actually doing it, is that the people who benefit from this aren't the people who pay the money for it directly. So the end user the transport company don't necessarily see any benefit from paying £300,000 out of their own pocket, and in this case it was funded by the Welsh government, part funded at least by the Welsh government. So the transport company don't see that money directly, or they don't see the direct benefit of that. Whereas us, the consumer, we do see the benefit of that. And they don't really care about us too much, really, very often. It tends to be about profit, especially if it's, if it's a group like, if it's any of the UK transport groups, really. I don't want to go naming names, Stagecoach.
It's a nasty cough you've got there, you're right.
Yeah, it is a nasty cough. It's not really, it's very hard to persuade them to spend the money to make this kind of stuff work, really. It takes somebody saying, you will do this, please, for the benefit.
But this is a perfect example of where we need central funding to move things forward. And I'm going to come back to one of my hobby horses. I won't bang on this time, but it requires a more holistic view of an area, the country, whatever, that we need to keep all the parts moving.
Does this start from smart cities, Andrew?
No. You know me better than that. No, but it does, doesn't it? It requires someone to sit there and stop looking at everything in isolation and start looking at them as they are, which is connected. Everything is connected to everything else in this country, whether it's very tenuously or whether there is an obvious direct link. And we need to start appreciating that. Well, the politicians and the civil servants and the people who are making decisions need to appreciate that and make decisions based on that, because we're not going to move things forward anywhere like we need it to, because otherwise we're going to have things like we've got today, which is you just go out and drive on any of our roads and look at the state of the roads.
And there's benefits to all of us by investing this
exactly
kind of stuff. In this sort of thing.
Even if we don't use public transport, there's a benefit to us because the traffic is flowing freer, even.
Yes, and it helps get us all into public transport. I know we're all, I would imagine, we're car folk listening to this, and that's cool, but we've got to realise that the car isn't always the answer all of the time, whilst we are humongous fans and probably spend far too much of our leisure time and our money on them. When it comes to getting around cities, cars are not the way to do it. Anyhow, this is the point of the show. We're about halfway through, where I want to remind you normally about our Patreon. I'm not going to do that this week. You'll find out in just a minute. If you would like to support us this week, we would really appreciate if you could leave a rating and review via the podcast playing platform of your choice. It really does make a humongous difference where we sit in the podcast charts by Apple and others, and that has an effect on how easy it is for us to get new listeners. Hello, new listeners. And as a result of listener numbers and things, for us to be able to do more and better, cooler things for you and for your listening, viewing and reading enjoyment. That would be just great. However, you'll notice there's no mention of money because, Andrew...
Yes, I hope most people who are listening to this are well aware of the tragic news last week that Henry Hope Frost lost his life while riding home from work. There has been an outpouring of love for him and also love for his wife and children, his three young boys, that... are left behind, and a Just Giving page has been set up to help them because he was the breadwinner in that household, and the people that knew him well and the family very closely came up with a way to try and take, in this terrible time for them, a little bit of stress off them, and the original target was £25,000. That has been exceeded, so they raised it up to £38,000 because 38 degrees, anything above that is a fever. And as we know with Mr. Hope Frost, fever was the word that you associate with him. As we record and I look at the Just Giving page, it's at 67,706. So what we're asking this week, and that is a brilliant effort, everybody. What we're asking this week is, if you were considering to give us any money, or if you haven't been aware of this and you can spare anything at all, we would ask that you would click on the links in the show note and give to this very worthy cause. Weekend is the 76th members meeting at Goodwood, which obviously Henry would have been on the microphone for, because he is considered by most of us, I think, the voice of Goodwood. They are going to actually hold a tribute to him before Saturday's Formula 5000 demonstration, where the engines are going to be fired up for a minute of fever. So that's one thing that's going to be happening there. There's a link in the show notes again, because there's other things like stickers there to buy, which again will all go to help this fund for Henry's family. So that's what we're asking this week, please.
Yes, please. Thank you. Yep. Cool. Well, not really. But yeah, let's shift on from that. Staying with motorsport in a sort of slightly tenuous link, then a quick reminder that Formula E is back this Saturday from Punta del Este in Uruguay.
Is that a new race?
So that will be...
They were there last year.
That's been there since the beginning, right. I think. Definitely last year. Definitely last year. No, Uruguay has been in since very early.
Okay, cool.
So that's going on Saturday. Keep an eye out. You can fan boost and all the usual stuff at FIAFormulaE.com.
Cool. It was Rally Mexico last weekend, and I managed to watch quite a bit of it for a change, which is unlike me, whilst it was going on, so it's even better. And Red Bull TV's coverage is fantastic, I have to say. It is really, really good. But by the end of it all, Sebastian Ogier won. And if you looked at day one, you didn't see that coming, I have to say. But as it just seems all these rallies this year have been brutal on the cars, really brutal. It was also the race that Sebastian Loeb came back into the championship for the first time since, I think, 2015. And he was leading the event at one point. He did not take long to show his class, shall we say. I mean, he benefited on the first day because he was lower down the field, so the road had been cleared and all that sort of stuff. But Toyota struggled. Some of the Hyundai struggled, although Sordo was leading it for quite a while as well. Punctures for Sordo and Loeb cost them their chance, which meant Ogier went past. And Chris Meek just made what he seems to do is he keeps making mistakes, little mistakes, that just cost him a lot of time. He rolled on his side at one point. He just drifted a bit wide at another point, and it just all mounted up. He's clearly quick. He just has to erase these little things that are just tipping it. I don't know whether it's because he's trying too hard or something, but never mind. Never mind. But again, it's fantastic. Fantastic event to watch. Fantastic highlights.
Yeah. And it's great to see that there's a mix of cars at the top there as well.
Because Toyotas were struggling with overheating on the first day. Then I think on the second day, somebody, one of the younger drivers, put it in the ditch,
which happened.
The next day it was out and it looked brand new. I mean, you told me how they've got everything there.
Yeah.
They just
gold panels.
You know, we just take the whole thing off and put it back on again because it's just quicker that way rather than trying to worry about this little tiny area. And the mechanics have done a fantastic job to get it out. So then obviously everybody kept going to get, you know, testing data, push as hard as they can, as many manufacturer points.
Yeah, in our blog, by the way, there is a photo gallery of photos, some of my photos from Rally Sweden. And in there are a whole load of some of the spares racks that Gazoo Racing, Toyota Gazoo Racing, carry with them to all of the rallies. So if you are interested in the kind of amounts of stuff that they carry, including entire transmission sets for each of the cars, then there are photos in the gallery on the website under the blog section.
Cool. I'll have links in the show notes. Talking of,
I would like to see Toyota further up that list.
Yes, obviously. Talking of Rally Sweden, though, Remember in the last one, Ogier decided to turn up late to the special stage.
That's why I didn't see him.
To then allow himself, as give himself the best possible chance when going through, because other people had gone through and cleared the track a bit for him. It didn't quite work out for him as he'd hoped, but it did become an advantage. Well, FIA, between that race and this, got in touch with everyone saying, please don't do that. Be good chaps and don't do that. And everyone went, nah, forget that.
Well, the trouble was that teams had thought about it and had gone, no, we won't do that. And then Ford turned up and actually did it.
So as soon as somebody's done it, then it was we can't not do it, can we?
And that's the thing. It's like, well, we don't know who's going to do it and who's not going to do it. We can't take the risk of being the ones who end up last because we haven't done it and everybody else
and
has.
Nobody was so, having a go at Ogier for doing this in the teams. Amongst the teams, nobody was saying he was wrong to do that. And I'm saying, well, yeah, if I was in the same position, I probably would have done it. But as Chris Meek said, and he's quoted in this Autosport article, he said, but now we go to the power stage with the potential for there being nothing to show for 20 minutes. That'll be great for live television.
I know. And in the power stage, they already leave it 4 minutes between cars instead of 2 minutes between cars. So there's always something out there whilst they're talking. So to be honest, the power stage is a great idea, but there's such a great gap between vehicles because they want to show the whole of one car going through for the telly that actually it's worse for spectators on the ground.
Not all that needed to happen.
Especially when it's -3 and it started snowing, okay?
Oh, let us play these tiny violins just for you, Alan. Yes. But all it needed was FIA to say, you are not allowed to do that. You will turn up at the allocated time. End of.
Yeah.
Or you're docked any points you make on the special stage.
I think that we will see that coming very soon.
I would imagine before the next one.
I think that is the only logical
It's just
outcome.
The easiest way to deal with it. Yes. Yeah. But if you get the chance to see the highlights, watch them because it's fantastic. And you see some of the hammering the cars get because this is the first sort of gravelly, dusty race of the year. And you see some of the travel of the suspension is amazing.
Yes. By the way, everyone was saying that you don't know which are decent cars until after Mexico. Okay, from now on, you can actually predict stuff up until Mexico. It's up for grabs, really.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
That was what we've been told.
Right. Cool. I've got...
Told that by Tommy Mackinnon himself. So I'd
fair
say
enough. I'll probably
source.
Take that on face value then.
Yes.
I've got one quick thing here. As everybody knows, we support Mission Motorsport whenever we can in telling you people about anything that's going on and stuff like that. Well, something I saw coming from one of the Mission Motorsport team in the last few days was that if you access your Amazon UK account with smile.amazon.co.uk and you select them as the chosen charity, they will receive a donation of 0.5% of whatever you spend. It doesn't cost you any money. Amazon give that to the charity. Now, this is a fantastic way to donate to Mission Motorsport. If you can, and if you do like what Mission Motorsport, the work they do and the support they give to people, then please consider clicking the link in the show notes and setting up your account in this manner. Right, anyway, Alan.
Next thing up is the start this weekend of the Classics and...
They only announced it last week. But it's...
No, they announced this ages ago. What date 25th. Is it then? 25th. Okay, so a week
We're giving
on...
advanced warning.
We are giving advanced warning. A week on Sunday then. Ish. Yeah. Week on Sunday is the first Great Estate Cars at Classics and Coffee meeting morning in... at their base in Redditch. They've done these before. I've talked about it before because I've been to them. But they were only doing 3 or 4 a year. Now they're going to do it each month. The list of dates. If you scroll far enough to actually read it, which I hadn't done, It will be on the it's on their website, greatescapecast.com.
From March through to October.
From March through to October, once a month, they'll be doing it. I'll try and get along to as many as I can. I can't this weekend because I'm away. I can the weekend after, actually, because for once I'm at home.
All burglars, if you could make sure that you have vacated the property.
Oh, give over. I feel there's only so paranoid I can be in my life.
Are you frightened? So not nearly frightened enough.
Just shut up, Andrew. Just go, okay?
Yes, go to the Classics. It's really good. Classics and Coffees. It's excellent.
It's excellent. It's another, again, they raise money for charity. For everyone that turns up, then they pay, every Classic Colour turns up, then they pay £1 to a local hospice. And they raised a couple of £1,000 in the past doing that. So please go along. There's always really interesting stuff. It's so varied. There can quite easily be Lamborghinis parked next to Ford Anglias, to MG Metros, to just the lot of Tickford Capris, all sorts. Go along. It's great. It's interesting.
Go and enjoy. Right. What has quickly become a part of the show, which is the suggested lunchtime reading.
It's been my feature. It's been a section which has kind of sneaked in there.
But this wasn't... Not deliberate, really, it's really just intentionally happened.
Is, yes.
This time it's from Eric Gallier, who is the editor chief in chief for Form Trends, which is a motoring design or transportation design blog. He has been on Rear View, is a thoroughly fascinating person, but he's actually written an open letter to design directors. Who did what? And he's essentially saying, can you please credit people who do the design rather than stand up there and go, I did the design, or let marketing and PR say, the design chief did the design. He makes a pretty good and very valid arguments as to why a design studio would seriously consider doing that if they had veered down the we don't put out pictures with any particular person's signature on them anymore, and we don't actually acknowledge who's the person who's done the most to make this the thing. So because that's something that's always I've always been curious about. If you're a design director, surely your ego is sufficiently strong enough to be able to say,
oh no, you've not met many
actually this chap here did the front end of this car and has made it special, which is why it is why it looks like why it does.
On the other hand, you can be a consultant designer, so to speak, I think it's the term used here, or work for a design consultancy working for a brand, and then you get absolutely no recognition whatsoever for something, even though you know where the original sketches and the original idea came from.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you can explain, because, and that's what happens. I mean, the big brand doesn't necessarily know, well, actually, we've got this design house to do it. And the design house then doesn't say, well, it was this bloke who actually left before it came. The project came to an end and that kind of thing.
No, I can see it. I can see it. Why
in a way. Team right anyway,
yeah, I can understand that. And if it's many tears down. But if it's your own internal team. Want your own internal team to be happy, surely. So, you know, as just good bossness.
Yeah, but people should be happy that they're car designers. They don't need anyone on that.
Because he goes on to talk about how Chris Bangle... we swap the cynical underpants of cynicism over to Alan at this moment in time.
Keep your dirty...
But he goes in this article to discuss about how Chris Bangle would pull out members of his team and say it's them. Which reminds me... I saw on Twitter, this is a slight aside, everyone, but I saw on Twitter, Autonocast, Ed Niedermeyer talked to Chris Bangle, and it's out this Thursday, and they talk about the future. Ooh, so keep your eyes peeled for Autonocast's next episode if you are someone who wants to listen to Chris Bangle, because he doesn't talk that often. So when he does, or it's not recorded often when he talks. So when he does, we should pay attention.
Yes, that should be interesting. Mm-hmm. Especially as he was working on that Chinese project, which you didn't like, but I did, which was all about autonomous vehicles. So that should really be an interesting one.
Yep.
Number of levels.
Right, Alan.
List the...
we gave you a week off of these types of lists, and now it's back.
I love this type. No, I like... Now, okay, so you know how the last few times we've done the worst lists, and I've gone, I don't like the worst lists, they're terrible out there, just
except
crazy.
For when I pick them.
I would like to point out it was me that picked the worst cars of 2018 Geneva Motor Show by Sam Burnett at Motor One. Sorry, after us talking about design directors crediting people, we feel we should be crediting people. So Sam chose 13 of the worst.
Did Masonry have 13 cars?
Mansouri, no, they didn't. They had about 8. He eventually got to the stage after he'd done 2 of them that he said everything else on it. So, I mean, I don't get... And let's focus on that, because I don't want to go through the whole list, but So let's talk a little bit about them, because I didn't at the top of the show. Why do you want your car to have the same texture as the granite that surrounds the sink in your bathrooms? I don't understand it. Your car is not made of stone. Why the heck do you want it to look like stone? Okay? It's gross. But this is a company that in the little display cases, along with the branded shoes and the lanyards, which I own for a sense of irony, and the magazines and all that stuff, has its own branded energy drink. Okay, it sells its own energy drink. That says all you need to know about their customers, really. That Monster isn't good enough for them or whatever. Those horrible things that taste like Actifed and sugar mixed, which is just gross. The other thing they had that really offended me on there was they had on the new Rolls Phantoms. Lovely car, really nice. Primrose and black, not a combination I would choose, but, you know, okay if you want that, black over primrose. However, one does not stance a Phantom. Let's make it clear. You are adding camber to your 24-inch wheels or whatever at the back is just wrong, people. Please. For the love of me, keeping my very expensive Pal Expo sandwich lunch in my stomach, don't do it. It's horrible.
He's to be fair to him, he has picked some mainstream stuff that people have been very, very complimentary about. And I'm tending to side with him on his choice.
I agree completely. The Eden Green's Eclat is particularly awful. I think that Sam's choices are spot on, actually. I don't know that I could do a better list than that myself. So please go take a look. It's only like 13 long. But there's a good reason. He's included his reasoning for them. It's not just the Austin Allegro, because everyone includes it on these lists. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is it.
That's it, because we didn't put in an end finally.
There isn't one. I think there isn't everyone's one. Got post-Geneva hangovers or something.
Yes, I could sympathise with that. I want the sparkly water.
No, bless you.
Yeah, poor little me. So quickly some parish notes before we round up. Last week was review week. So the review came out on Monday because we didn't really think that Friday was appropriate. And it is Jay Ward.
That is correct.
I forgot his name. Good, that was going to be embarrassing. Of Ford. So you are super enthused about this one, even more than you normally are. I haven't got around to listening to it yet. I'll do it on my way home in a couple of nights.
It's just over 2 hours, and by golly, we cover a lot. He has done a lot, and we cover a lot.
Cool. So that sounds particularly good one to read, to listen to, even. Catch up. It's been a long week already, and it's only Tuesday night. So there's that. So it's no review. Time to catch up on that one this week.
But there will be a special edition Friday.
Will there?
Good. Well, if tomorrow night goes well.
Provided we record it tomorrow night, then there will be a special edition. Yes. Yeah, that's about it. So let's just round off in the usual manner and remind you that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and at the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget about the Henry Hope Frost Just Giving page that Andrew talked about earlier on, for your financial anythings of this month. Please also leave a rating review on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me would be via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen on there, you should see me. And Alan, if people want to get in touch with you personally, what is the best way for them to do that?
Best way is, once again, Twitter. I'm at AJPBradley, BIEDLEY. So, we'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.